Welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Emily Scarlett. The world financial system is on the brink of collapse. That's according to billionaire investor George Soros. He recently said that the system is in a self-reinforcing process of disintegration, and the quote, the consequences could be quite disastrous. How nice. Well, to get some perspective on what's likely ahead, I'm joined by Dr. Timothy Nash, a professor at Northwood University, who publishes the university's monthly economic outlook. Welcome to the program, Tim.
Great to be here with you, Mike.
Now, you know, I grew up in Midland. I remember Northwood Institute is what it was called when I lived there. How big of a campus and how big of a population base does the university now have?
Well, system-wide, which includes campus and relationships in China and Europe, we're just over 7,000 students.
It is primarily a business university, right?
We strictly offer bachelor's of business administration degrees at the undergraduate level and MBAs at the graduate level.
Now, I want to talk about your most recent monthly economic outlook because you reflect on the financial crisis in Europe. And I know our own economic conditions are not stellar at this point. But is George Soros right? I mean, are we on the brink of something catastrophic here?
Oh, I think that we are on the brink of a potential global recession. I would disagree with Mr. Soros in terms of the root cause, but the problems today with regard to the global economy is simply and unequivocally that governments are spending too much money, they are not living within their means, and as a result, the financial communities literally around the world have lost confidence in the government as it relates to its ability to pay off debts. As you look at the United States, Mike, government consumed 7% of GDP in the late 1800s, early 1900s. Today, government consumes 40% of GDP. Soon will be 41%. So the problems that we see in the United States are even worse in Europe and growing in terms of a major problem in Asia. As an example, our national debt as a percent of GDP is about 98%, and Japan is closing in on 200%. In Europe, it averages for the European Union collectively, it averages somewhere between 110 and 115% of GDP.
We hear so much about this crisis in Europe, although from what you're saying, it sounds like the situation in Asia is far worse.
Well, no, I would not say that. I would say in Japan, the problem is potentially far worse, but in Europe as a whole, Europe right now is living on a socialist agenda where government consumes now on average slightly greater than 50% of GDP, and the government is making a lot of promises to people that it simply cannot adhere to. It has a very burdensome social medical system. It has an incredibly burdensome pension system, and again, a lot of promises were made to people. But those promises were not funded well in the past. As you know, with your 401k or any type of investments that you have for the future, if you don't put money in, by the time you get to that destination in time, if you haven't funded it properly, the results won't be there. And that's exactly what's happening in Europe as they take a look at the strikes in Greece. Many of these strikes are over pensions that have been underfunded for decades, where the government has taxed at very high rates but spent it on different programs, underfunded pensions, figured that they would get to funding the pensions in the future, and each year the additional funding never came, and now the day of reckoning is here. And so the two solutions left are either increase the money supply, print money in essence, or cut government spending.
And, well, isn't that what we're doing here, though, in the U.S., printing money?
Well, at this point, that's exactly what we're doing, and we cannot continue to do that. We're, in my opinion, 3 to 5, maybe, hopefully, 10 years behind the Europeans. But the solution is not to print money. What most people don't realize is that it's not businesses that cause rising prices. It's government inflation.
The formation of the European Union, was that a mistake? I mean, how much of a factor is the fact that they're now one unit in terms of the consequences of what we're seeing with these potential defaults?
In my opinion, I don't think it was a mistake. I think it was a pipe dream, but I don't think it was a mistake. The Europeans, if you go back to the late 1990s, created what was called the Maastricht Treaty, which formed the European Union. They had the EEC, or the European Economic Community, before that. And the European Union got off to a bad start for a couple of reasons. One, it acts like a political union, but it's an economic union. So ultimately, any country can leave the European Union or the euro currency. That's the first point. So it doesn't have the teeth that we have in the United States, with a state not being able to secede from the union, if you will. The other problem that you have is that some of the major powers in Europe, especially the British, decided not to participate in the euro. Switzerland never joined the European Union, either as a economic member or as a member of the euro, because they feared some of the currency problems that are now being faced by the Europeans.
A wise decision in hindsight?
Oh, I think a wise decision by the Swiss, for sure, and quite frankly for the British.
I'm talking to Dr. Timothy Nash, professor at Northwood University. We're talking about the university's newest monthly economic outlook. So what are the real consequences? You say that we could be years behind Europe in terms of ending up in the same state that they are in now. What are the immediate consequences over the next year or two on our own economy of this European crisis?
Well, if you take a look at it, Mike, one of the real problems is increasing interest rates. If people don't want to buy your debt because you know they're worried about the debt instruments, the bonds being paid off, then what's going to happen is you're going to have to pay a higher interest rate. So if you just imagine our national debt goes to $16 trillion, and right now we're paying $414 billion a year just interest on the national debt in the U.S., no principal. That's larger than the entire economy's GDP in Switzerland. And so what would happen if that interest rate goes up from roughly 3% today to 4%? You know, that would mean another $150 or $130 billion in interest payments.
Now, one thing you note in your monthly outlook report is that U.S. non-financial corporations have cash reserves of almost $2 trillion. I mean, how unusual is it to see so much corporate money on the sidelines?
It's very unusual, and the main reason is that there's a lack of confidence in the economy right now. People don't know if we're going to have higher taxes. Businesses are very worried about the regulatory structure. I think it's irresponsible when government leaders are saying we need to pass this program to find out what's in it. We've done that two or three times with major pieces of legislation in the last couple of years. So there is a real lack of confidence in this economy. Corporate balance sheets are in a very strong position today. U.S. productivity is among the highest in the world. As you noted, there's a lot of cash on the sidelines in the U.S. There's another $1.2 trillion overseas because of our tax system. Right now, the U.S. economy is prepared to do better, but there's a lack of confidence because business leaders don't know what regulations are going to be like in the future, and they don't know what taxes are going to be like in the future.
But, I mean, part of the picture here is you have people, you have high unemployment, a lot of people even back in the workplace are making smaller wages, yet you have these corporations sitting on trillions of dollars. I mean, there seems to be kind of an inequality in terms of who's really suffering at this point in our economic cycle, does it not?
Well, I would simply say that there are a lot of people that have lost tremendous amounts of wealth. You know, the problem that you see today is that if we have a repeat of 2008, you know, we're going to wipe out tens of trillions of dollars worth of wealth in the economy. So, you know, I have all of the empathy and sympathy in the world for those that are unemployed and for those that are seeking jobs. The fact of the matter is, should we say to these companies, should we force them like a socialist or a communist country to invest these dollars in an economy where they're going to lose their money and create even more unemployment, create massive unemployment? You know, don't forget we had 25% unemployment during the Great Depression. It's not that these companies, Mike, don't want to hire people, that they don't want to grow their businesses. They absolutely do. But we have to give them an environment. We have to give them an incentive to do so.
Finally, in terms of the outlook, it sounds like whether we continue on this path and as George Soros says, face some disastrous consequences, or whether we go ahead and do these painful cuts that might be necessary, the hard times are likely ahead for many Americans.
Well, I think that this is not going to be without pain. To get out of the economic downturn was painful getting in, and it is not going to be easy getting out. But I will simply say this. you and I happen to live in the greatest economy in the history of the world, and we happen to live in a wonderful state with rich traditions called Michigan.
Dr. Tim Nash, professor at Northwood University, thank you very much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And we'll be right back with more. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.